Thank you so much. Hey, everybody. Well, it's good to see you all. I think that I got to meet a lot of people as they were coming in, but there were just some people who kind of jumped in at the last second. So what I'd love to have happen, if we could, and again, just introduced, I'm Jim Kierstead. So I've been producing theater for about 20 years now, theater, film, and television. We've done shows, you know, this recent year, like Hades Town, and Pretty Woman, and Be More Chill, to name a few. We did Kinky Boots. That was my first Broadway show that I was a co-producer on, Pippin, the revival of Pippin. But what I really love to do is develop work from the ground up. That's sort of how I got into this business about 20 years ago. So I only got into the Broadway co-producing world in the last like 7 or 8 years. But for 20 years, I've been finding properties and helping to develop them. So I'm on the board of 3 not-for-profit theaters. I've been on the York Theater Company board for 15 years now. We've done 3 shows over there that I developed. I've been on the Abingdon Theater Board for about 3 years and the New York Theater Barn for 2. So I really like to get in there and work with people and, you know, just help them and put resources together. So I think what would be fun for me to hear, maybe for everybody else, maybe we might all know each other, but I think it would help me to direct our conversation a little bit better if we just quickly go around the room and I can know your name and also what you're here for and maybe where you're from. I think that might be helpful because we're all from all over the place, I think. Could we start with you?
Sure. My name is Jill Wright. Mm-hmm. I live in Los Angeles. 2 interesting things you might want to know about me is that I was born in a tornado in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
My parents always said, honey, what did we expect? She was born in a tornado.
Right.
So dancing and singing my whole life. Mm-hmm. Started writing about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. I thought I wasn't supposed to be writing because I was, you know, dancing and singing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. And okay. I won a lot of stuff for my poetry and stuff like that and songs. But my show is called Beggars and Choosers, the musical.
Mm-hmm.
It is about a group of people who go to a bank to try to get help with all of their various money problems, getting money for their kids' college, getting money, you know, getting their credit card set up and set up. And, but there are 2 people among this group are very special. They're called Yin and Yang. They're mixed race twins,
mm-hmm.
and their parents have died. Now their grandmother has died. They're homeless. And the show actually starts with them in Granny's house.
Oh, my God. I want to hear all about this, but what I want to do first, we're going to get to this, but I really just want to hear your name, where you're from, and tell me why you're here. Like, because it sounds like, are you a writer and you want to produce your show and find a producer, or are you a producer and you found a show? That's kind of what I want to know, because there's a lot of people, and I want to make sure we get through everybody and really get what you're here for.
Yeah, I live in Los Angeles.
Yes.
We've done several readings in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I need a director.
Yep.
I need at least one producer. I'm
mm-hmm.
producing myself.
Okay, so you're a writer, and you're looking for a producer.
Right.
Great. Next.
Okay. I'm a writer from Boston area, a rock opera that has been produced multiple times, and we're looking to move it forward. And then I have a couple theater things that I'm developing, but I'm looking to, you know, do stage readings and like you said, from the ground up stuff.
Okay, great. So writer looking for producer and self-producing work. Great. For now. For now.
Okay, Marilyn Barrialli, mm-hmm. you may know the name in terms of public.
Yes, of course. Yes. I remember you.
Yeah, thank you. And so I smile, and one of the musicals I see was had a stage reading last year, mm-hmm. The Curious Journey, here at Baton. But I'm currently working on a musical that is an anti-drug musical,
mm-hmm.
for teenagers.
Yes.
It's an American teenager.
And you're producing that musical?
That's
or are you looking for somebody?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I could use someone.
Yes. Okay, but you're the writer.
I am the composer and writer.
Great, great. Is everybody here, maybe we should do this by show of hands, actually, just for interest of time. put your hand up if you're the writer of a piece and you're looking for a producer. Okay, so we've got a lot of writers here. Mm-hmm. Hand up if you're a producer and you've got a piece or you're looking for a piece. Great.
What?
Producer? Like, there's something, and you're looking to produce a piece, or you're looking for a piece to produce?
Uh-oh.
Right. So, like, I would imagine, and like, okay, so we've got some people with hands up, and you're writers, and you're going to be self-producing, or you're looking for a producer. And then we've got producers who have a piece, or are looking for a piece. So I've seen those 2 things. Is there a third thing? Because I don't think you raised producers.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I feel like I'm both, or maybe
you mentioned that. Okay. So did you wrote something?
I wrote a bunch of things.
Okay.
And I'm a performer.
performer, but I've always self-produced.
Yes.
And I think by nature I'm a producer, and
yes.
So I'm looking for mentorship on doing that more officially.
And would you be doing that with other people's work or your own work?
My own work.
Your own, okay. So that was like the first category. Okay, great. Yes, so maybe you can fit into those two. Great. Fabulous. Fabulous. Good. That's great. Anything else?
We're creative producers that are looking also for producers.
Great. Great. Wonderful. So you're looking for pieces to produce.
No, we have the piece.
You have these. And you're looking to present those, and you're looking for other people to come on board with you.
Yes.
Got it. Yes.
I only produced the a musical last year with 10 performances in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the writer, the book writer, and the music, and the director.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to take it to Off-Broadway,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking for a director and the whole new team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Great. And how many people here from New York, from the East Coast?
But I came from L.A., so I'm originally from here.
Great. We'll count you for L.A. for now. I love it. I love it. Okay. And if you're from the West Coast, where are you from?
L.A.
Okay. L.A. And if you're from somewhere else? Okay. We've got a couple. All right. So this is pretty diverse crowd, right? So it's like how somebody, I would love to hear somebody here share their experience so far with what it's been like to present their work, and how have you done that? Like, has anybody here been successful with presenting their work?
To
a theater, or to find a producer for your work, and investors. Yeah, I'd like to hear what you've done. Like, what have you done?
Right, well,
I want to hear your success story.
Jill Wilkinson, and I'm in the Detroit area,
mm-hmm.
and my husband is a composer there, so we have Pete that we've been working on developing to bring me up. We've been doing showcases, concert presentations of the show in and around the Detroit area,
mm-hmm.
and they have grown from about 200 in attendance to over 750 in attendance for a single performance.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time we have raised our fundraise from those, or that fundraise from those.
Mm.
So we're looking for closing in on about 700,000 in investment raised from those.
That's fantastic. So it seems to me.
We have one reading in New York, and we're going to do a reading, a workshop in the Detroit area this fall, and to get ready to bring it to New York in some sort of a reading workshop kind of a thing, where we go through another round of hearing it before we show it to New York before then.
Wonderful, wonderful. So it sounds to me like you did a reading in New York, and now you've been doing these showcases at your home, near your home, in a theater?
Yeah, in theaters around the Detroit area.
And you've used that to bring in people, to see it, and they've given you like $700,000 so far in fundraising.
It's
fantastic. Now, who are these people who you've been inviting? Who are these people who have given you the $700,000?
In the very first showcase, which was May 2018, we started with
mm-hmm.
And we didn't just invite people who could afford to invest, because we weren't even really looking at investment. We didn't think we were ready to start that part. And so we had a 90-seat theater that we got 100 people in each night, and for two nights in a row. And from there, we raised all of our money,
mm-hmm.
about $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly $250,000, because it was five people for 50 each. So, and then we, for our next round, because they wanted us to do another concert for their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first round, we knew everybody there. In the second round, we knew probably half the people there, and we rented a theater in downtown Detroit, and that was happened to be a $450, and we were a private event, so the guy just got pushing the counter at $450, and we had it. Another 50 people in there at least.
Mm-hmm.
That's what those, I don't think that's worse for people to sit on
it. That's right.
There you go.
Some
people come upstairs, we call them risers. That's right, absolutely. So we had, it was packed. And we probably knew maybe half the people there.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew some people that had done inviting, and then they brought a lot more people. Maybe we knew a third. this past May, which was the last time that it was an inner circle, which is why I wasn't here, was we were asked to do the concert at a church for as part of their concert series.
Mm-hmm.
And we had in excess of 750 people. They were literally hanging from the rafters. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about putting on huge, crazy events like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably knew 10% of the people.
So this is a super helpful conversation, and this is a little bit more fundraising so far, and I know people had a little concern about fundraising, and I promise we'll get to the pitch part of it, but I think it all goes hand in hand a bit, right?
So part comes down,
oh, absolutely. Oh, I'm going
to
get back to you and ask you on that too, but I want to focus on a couple things that you've just said that I think are really important, right? So a lot of times people will say to me, like, oh, I can't fundraise. I don't know how to fundraise. And I'm like, well, You can fundraise, and you must fundraise, right? That's part of being a producer. And when somebody says, like, well, I want to be a producer, I'm not going to fundraise, I'm like, well, you're not really going to be a producer then. I hate to tell you, unless you're going to work in somebody's office and, you know, do it for a fee for somebody else who does it. So fundraising is a really integral part of producing theater. And when somebody says to me, like, well, you have investors, how do you get investors? And I say, well, you know, I didn't start with investors. You have to find them. And I think you're doing a really great job. What your story sort of underscores for me, and I hope everybody in this room could take this away, is you end up looking for the people closest to you. And you said something really important, right? Initially you might say, well, I'm not going to ask, you know, my Aunt Jeannie because she's got no money, and I'm not going to ask this person because they've got no money. So you're trying to think of the people who have money. But what you did, from what I'm gathering, is you're just asking, like, everybody you know to come. And you want everybody to be there and support your product without actually even asking for anything from them yet. So you bring them in, you get them excited about the project, and what ends up happening is, right, you tell two friends and you tell two friends and so on and so on and so on. I think it's similar, right? So you brought these people. You didn't even really ask them for anything initially. And then you said, hey, I'm doing another presentation. If you like what you saw, bring people. And you keep bringing people. And then you build your people who know about this piece. And then finally, you've got people hanging from the rafters, like you said before. So I think that, you know, that's a great approach. And I think that when we're working on theater, especially if you're not an own producer, right, if you're not a producer who could say, like, well, this is my list of credits and awards and all this stuff, and you're just trying to get people to pay attention to what you're working on, I think that you have to go to the people that you know first. And you can't stop asking. You've got to, you can't draw the line at asking anybody. You have to tell every single person what you're doing, even if they don't seem like the one who could invest. You maybe you're just like, I know this person has like no money to invest in a theater piece. They just can't do it. But they may know somebody, and they know. And I've had that happen so many times where you go and you talk to somebody and you say, like, hey, you know, I'm working on this piece, and A, they might surprise you, and they may have a lot more money than you think. And B, they might say, well, I don't do that, but my brother is a hedge fund person, and he loves investing in theater. And, you know, so you really have to just keep this conversation as part of your everyday life. It just has to be something you tell everybody about, and you actually get better at it, right? You get better at it as you go because you're constantly talking about it. I've had people say to me, like, I can't ask people for money. I can't get into that. But as soon as you start doing it all the time, it really opens up that door. So.
Yeah. From the stage, there is no ask.
Yes, mm-hmm. Smart.
It's done in the networking afterglow.
So tell us now, right? So this is a great lead-in. So we're here for talking about pitching. So how do you pitch these people? How do you follow up with these people now that you've got their contact information?
Most people that are there, because I'm from the Detroit area, mm-hmm. have never invested in a show of any kind ever in their life, never thought about it. They think of investing as buying their tickets to the Fisher Theater.
Mm-hmm.
That's their investing.
Yes.
And then when they have to go to $130 or something, they have to think really twice about it. So they are not familiar with anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
But my first people I follow up with are people who I'm talking to, and they say, what does it take to get a show on? Because we say our goal is to take this to Broadway. This,
mm-hmm.
is, this is our dream, this is our goal, this is what we're putting everything down on, and we're all in on.
Yes. And how do you get those people excited about the piece? That's what I want to know.
Well, first of all, they just watched it.
Yes.
Or they watched it. They've heard, we have the website. There are samples of music on the website. So
mm-hmm.
I advertised it through Facebook. A lot of the 750 people connected to it through Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook did a tremendous artificial intelligence job of anything, you know, people who Google Bonhoeffer, that's the name of our show, or mm-hmm. whatever, that are looking. I mean, I had people calling from Ohio, all over Ohio and all over Michigan and stuff from, now tell me about this, what are you doing, and, you know.
So I like what your approach is, right? This is a really good approach. So you put on a presentation, you do advertising about it, even though you're not selling tickets for it, you're still building a media presence for it on Facebook. So it's out there in the world, and you're actually probably enhanced Facebook a little bit with the ad budget. Is that true? So you could get to the right people you were looking for, right? Because I don't know if everybody knows this, right? But you can create your page on Facebook, but that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg, right? There's this huge knowledge and skill set about using Facebook as a marketing tool, and anybody who's really using Facebook other than just, you know, posting the pictures of their family birthday party or something like that, you're going and you're targeting an audience, and you're paying for that advertising and that page to pop up for people. So I think what you're describing is you did a little bit more of a deep dive instead of just posting, like, we're doing a reading on your page. You really created a marketing strategy to make this happen.
Because mm-hmm. when I made it an event,
mm-hmm.
and once you make it an event, then Facebook just, like, says all the things you want to do to it. It was like, you didn't have to be a Facebook guru to do that, because mm-hmm. I'm 60 years old. I'm not a Facebook guru.
Fabulous. Yeah.
You are now.
You are. You're going to be like social media lady. This is great.
And then I'm just like getting all these people from like all over the place, and my cell phone number's on there. So my, you know, I had this policy of not answering calls that I didn't recognize because of robocalls and stuff, and now I have to answer every call because they're all like, most of them were legit.
How many calls were you getting, like, a week from this, from what you did?
I was getting probably 100 calls a day.
100 calls a day. 100 calls a day.
2 weeks before the showcase, about 100 calls a day.
Say what your piece is about again.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer, theologian, who's just against the Nazis.
Incredible.
An incredible person who needs to be talked
about. Wow.
Are you selling tickets for this?
We did not sell tickets for it.
It's been reading so far.
It was a free, what the church does is they ask for a free will offering, and so that goes towards their mission work of the church. So they got the free will offering. We took none of that.
What made you go to this location to do it? Because I love talking about this fundraising part of it, but it's like, it sort of is hand in hand with pitching, right? Because we're supposed to be talking about, make sure we talk about pitching. So how did you get that theater to want to present this show?
They had come previous.
See, I think that this stuff goes really hand in hand, everybody, right? Because we're talking about pitching, but we're talking also about getting people to know about your show. And I think once people can see it rather than just read it, like, you know, these, I love pitch events. I think when, you know, we've done those with, you know, Ken's organization and other organizations and whatnot, or you're just cold calling people and you give a pitch, those are really valuable things. But there's something about handing somebody a bunch of documents and talking about it that's good and it's better than nothing. But if you can show it to people, and the key to doing the showing, right, to do the readings that you're talking about, is you have to get the right people into the room. It's really nice to have a reading of 500 people, but if none of those people are interested in being a part of theater or have a regional theater or something like that, then you've kind of done something amazing, but it's like if the tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it to make a sound, right? So I think...
In a house full, those people in the room that have the money,
yes,
when they see the reaction of 700
yes.
or 500 people to your piece, they are inspired to write checks.
Absolutely. And there's something else that's really important about this conversation, too. So you're from Detroit, right? Before we did a show of hands about where people are located. So we've got a bunch of people from, like, the East Coast, the New York area. We've got a bunch of people from L.A. And then we had a bunch of people from the Midwest. And I always say that, you know, we're us New Yorkers, us Broadway people, we're a little bit, like, snooty sometimes. Not me, of course. But we're doing a little bit snooty sometimes about, well, New York is theater. You know, this is all about theater. But then, of course, the reality is the theater is everywhere. It's every community has a theater. Every place around the country has theater. Everybody wants to be entertained. So, you know, when people are looking at New York, it's all well and good, but the problem with New York is everything's really expensive. There's a lot going on here. There's like hundreds of shows being performed every night. And the other problem is when you're talking about raising money for your show and pitching it to theaters, everybody's coming here. The people here, the investors in New York, are so picked over. As soon as they find out that somebody's an investor in theater, like they're descended on, like vultures. They pick the meat from their bones, I swear. If you were an investor in New York City, you'll have people calling you morning, noon, and night every time. It'll be like, you'll get this offer for a show from like 20 people, the same show. And it doesn't take long to get your name out there. So what I think is very valuable about this conversation, and this is especially valuable for people who are not from New York or have a connection with some other area, everybody thinks that, you know, investing in theater, they don't know about it, number one, so you have to educate them. But number two, people really end up saying, like, this is sort of cool. I never got an opportunity to invest in theater before. I can be part of that. I could be part of Broadway, you know, or whatever that means to them. And I think that if you live in a different area, you have the opportunity to bring somebody into a world that they would never have gotten to be part of. So keep that in mind when you're looking at your base, you know. It's like, how can you get your piece pitched? And again, this is very synergistic about the pitching and the fundraising. So how can you pitch this piece to people and A, show them rather than telling them what you're doing? So by putting in these readings and these presentations and inviting people, and instead of being like, here's my stuff, you know, do you like it? And they're like, oh my God, I hope this person's not asking me for money. You invite them to a kind of a great evening, and they get to see firsthand what the reaction is, how they feel from the piece, and you're not really asking them for anything, at least not right away. So it's a great way to expose people, and you're in a really valuable place if you're not from New York, because you're going to have a whole different base of people who haven't been picked over by vultures. So it's a good thing. Yeah. I love that. Do you have anything more to add? Because I think your examples so far are great. And then we're going to see who else has some cool success stories.
Just need to figure out how to take it to the next level.
Good. Good. Well, you sure seem like you're on your way.
I had a question about theaters. Don't make an ask for mistake, which is totally reasonable. But then, is it out in the lobby? You're handing out cards?
We always have a email list super nice after classes. Even in the church, but it was my best closed for us. We always have a reception. I will say that that people, when people feel like you're a first class kind of presentation all the way around, and I had to come in, which is why I was glad I was in the last inner circle, because I was going to come in the circle with that home to for the Sunday night thing. And I was like, oh my God, because I saw what they were setting up for the after vote, and it was like Mabel Gray's after funeral kind of like setup. And I was like, oh no, this will not do this. This is not our branding that we've had for our other things, because when people are relaxed and they're enjoying themselves afterwards and talking, they get very talky. And then you can pick out who the people you have to follow up. And you know, and I just said, here's my card. Is it okay if I follow up with you? Are you on the website? Because did you register with our website so I can find you, or can you give me your contact information and we can follow up at a more comfortable time?
Mm-hmm.
And I always hand them my card so that I say, here's my card. I'm not expecting you to call me, but that way you'll recognize my name when I call you.
Oh, I see. You're great. You're hitting on all cylinders here. Mm-hmm. The other thing you just said that's really important is you have this amazing presentation, you're trying to pitch your show to all this group of people, some you know, some you don't, and then you know what people do after it's over, you know what a lot of people do? They don't follow up with anybody. And it's like you just went to all this trouble, and you don't follow up, and the people leave, and they may have really good intentions about what they just saw, but they get busy, and it's not their first priority, and they just, you know, they throw away the brochure, or they forget about what it was like 2 days later. So by what you just said, you've made a really good overture to give people contact information, say, I will be following up with you, and then you actually follow up with them and find out.
Follow up with our current investors,
mm-hmm,
to find out who they brought.
Yes.
And who they think we need to follow up with.
Well, I think, I feel like we just planned this outside so you're to come in and talk about this. Because the other thing that you said that's really incredible is a lot of times people who are your friends, even if they don't want to invest in your show, but some of these people who know people or have brought people to the event, they can be a great ally for you, because a lot of times what's fun is even if you can't do a gigantic performance all the time, right, because that becomes hard, you can actually start doing little salons. You like do small salons. And you might have a friend who's got a beautiful home and a piano or an area where they can do it, and you invite people over for cocktails because it won't be in that Methodist church where it's dry. And you come on over and you do a little bit of a 45-minute performance, and everybody sits around and talks about the show, and it's a way that you can be more intimate with them, right? Because if you've got a room of 400 people, it's harder to really spend any time. But here, if you've invited 20 people who are really focused, you can spend a lot of time with those people individually and still not give them an enormous amount of pressure. But there's something by being invited to that salon, even though you're not going to hold a gun to their head saying, you must invest in my show, there's still kind of an understanding with most people that you're raising money and you want to bring people on. And that's a great time where you can actually hand out some of those materials and you can really have that conversation with people. And it's a nice time for people to mill about afterward with their glass of champagne and their cookie and talk about what they just experienced, right? And it's a way to get these people excited. And there's nothing like having some of your hardcore investors, some of your followers, or the friends of these people be there and talking about how great the show is and that they're going to be a part of it. Because nothing works like peer pressure than bringing other people involved in these projects. So it's a really great way of spreading out and bring people in. Yeah. And you've done that.
Did you have more than yourself? Did you have other lieutenants with you? Introducing yourself, saying,
well, our investors were making sure that the people they brought got to meet Scott, my husband, got to meet. We brought in two Broadway stars that from our 29-hour reading in December, so they got to talk to Tally Sessions, and they got to talk to
Tally.
Julie Lytle, and so they really, and then, of course, Tally and Julia are pretty smart people, so they're, making sure that...
So you had a few others.
They were networked.
And what about Scott? Did he stay out of the fundraising conversation, or did he direct the fundraising?
He's
the writer.
I always try to get investor meetings when Scott can be there because he's extremely impressive, and that way I have to do less selling because he's just much more impressive.
He talks about creative
and the passion behind the show and how he was inspired and how it. Just everything, and when you're talking to Scott, you almost just want to pull out your checkbook, and it's been working out.
But did he actually say, have you ever thought of investing? I mean, did he actually ask for investment?
No, I didn't ask.
I think that's a really great way to do it, because also think about it this way, right? For these people who are coming, right, they're a little starstruck when they see New York actors, right? They don't care about producers. We're like nobody to them. They're like, they want us to write a check. But when they think of Broadway, they think of stars on a stage, right? That's what people think of. They're like, they don't even know about producers. They don't know what a producer does. So they think of these stars on a stage. And if you can bring in these folks as allies, people who even have some credits, and I love Tally. I mean, he's been brought to Broadway many times. We've done stuff together. And you've brought them in. You bring the writer in who can talk passionately about their piece. They can discuss, this is why I created this. This is what, it means to me. People love that. It makes it very personal for them. And then you don't, and again, I think that your question is really good. I think if you allow these people to kind of be the cheerleaders for it, and then after they're all hyped up, you can kind of swoop in there and start to be like, hey, did you like what you saw today? Would you like to be a part of what we're doing? You can be a part of this too, I mean, it's a really fun way. And what I always say when, bringing people in during this pitch is to sort of be like, well, we're giving you a great opportunity, right? So I think it's a lot on how you present this, because you can go and say, if you're a brand new person trying to raise money and trying to pitch your show, you can just be like, God, I hope somebody likes my show. I hope, I don't know if they're going to give me money. Broadway's pretty risky. But if you look at it from the other way and say, like, I'm giving this person this opportunity to do something that they've never done before, and where else would they have the chance to be part of this? And it doesn't even have to be for an exorbitant amount of money, right? It can, you can start slower and then build up to stuff, because if people are having a good time, they'll do it more and more. You know, it's like something that becomes part of their DNA. It's a little, it's quite addictive after a while. And you'll find that your investor pool will support this project. And then if you've got your next project coming up, you'll be like, oh, my pitch now all of a sudden can be to people who are existing. And I think that's what you even referenced before. You talk to people who have already been supportive on the piece, and you can do that with subsequent pieces down the road, even after you're past this one, even after this one has been on Broadway. So yeah, I think that what you're saying is such a good idea. So, it, but I think that it's possible. Just keep in mind that the way you pitch it, with that optimistic thing, like, I'm giving you an amazing opportunity to be a part of something special, is the way to do it. Keep, try to figure out how to do that in your world.
But
yes.
That
yes. You know what I do? I'll tell you my secret for that, okay, because this is something fun. You know, I don't know if you're at the point where you're asking people to be co-producers with it, get billing and all that kind of thing, you know.
Cause, we actually are just starting
that. Well, never underestimate the ego, right? People love their name on stuff. It's like, it's very valuable. I've had people, like, you say, like, oh, you do this, put this amount of money, and they're like, I don't know. Well, if you do twice that amount, we could give you billing. Like, oh, really? Oh, let me think about that. You know, that really does. But you're asking for twice the amount of money, but they get their ink on the page, so they'll do it. It's really interesting.
At the beginning of the show, we have a video that Ken made for us. Uh-huh. You know, giving our credibility, New York credibility for us. And one of the pictures that we use on that is Ken accepting the Tony for a run from the island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I use that picture.
Yeah, I use that picture.
Those are
producers.
That's right.
We're on the stage. That's right. That's right. It's
you were giving up on them. I've already raised it. We're still giving a bonus on it, but so it's not, you know, the straight investor money now, but they don't get the upfront bonus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To another level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really great. Yeah, so I think that, you know, if you're able to bring people on and offer them co-producer status or, you know, something other than just like I'm putting money in, that it does a few things, right? Because A, you're bringing people in and you're giving them an incentive to be part of it, but the other thing that's great about it is it also gives them ownership of the piece. So they can go tell people like, hey, I'm working on this amazing piece, right? They become your ambassadors for the project, and then they can pitch as well, you know, keeping this pitch thing, which we're supposed to be talking about, into this, right? So you can use that as a way to pitch your piece also. And I loved your lieutenant word before. These are your lieutenants, right? They're these people who are ambassadors to what you're working on, and they're passionate about it as well. And, you know, the other fun part is if you say to somebody like, yeah, we're pretty much capitalized. I've just got like one spot left. There's one unit left, one co-producer spot. Oh, you'll be amazed how much people will get excited about that. They'll be like, oh, I better act fast. I don't want to be missing out on that. As opposed to, oh, we've got an endless supply. You know, we've got all this stuff to raise, you know. But if it's the last piece, people want to be that last guy or woman, you know. It's really it's up for discussion. Like, it really depends on the show, right? So, you know, if you're talking Broadway, usually plays will be, it could be, I mean, it really depends on the show. I wouldn't think you normally get a co-producing slot. You know, this is a ballpark. It's usually for a Broadway show, it'd be around like, you know, $100,000 is the lowest level. And you're going to, you know, the whole point is you get percentage points back after the show goes into profit. So the more money you bring in, the better you do after the show recoups. But, you know, as far as billing, you can be a co-producer for not horrible amounts of money on a play. But usually the way you do it is you do it, okay, this is what I was going to say before. So you'll bring in like a unit, for example. You might say, well, my unit is, and if you're just raising money now, you might say my unit is $5,000. It doesn't have to be that high, right? But for a musical on Broadway, like, a lot of times what I'll say is, okay, the unit size is $50,000 for one unit. And then I'll say, but you can split it in half if you want to. We could give you half of a unit. So you're still giving them that higher amount, but you're not preventing them from being a part of it if they get sticker shock, which some people will. They'll be like, they'll be called $50,000. Oh, I didn't think it was going to be that much,
that's
right?
The difference between that and that. Our unit is just $50,000 and that goes. But you can buy just another unit.
Yes.
And I say, so then he lowballs people, and I say, our unit is $50,000, but you can buy more than that.
I love it. I love it. I love it. It's true. Well, and the other thing you can do too, the other little trick, right, is you can say, yeah, the unit is $50,000, and feel free to bring other people in to split that up with. You can do your 50. Maybe you've got five friends who want to do 10, and we'll bring that in your situation.
Well, see, that's what people ask me too. And what I tell them is, I need, split it to a production of it, I need to be able to say, I have, I've raised $1.5 million. So I tell them my immediate goal right now is $1.5 million. And we're in the second half of that. And then they're like, well, what, you know, do you have budgets? And I'm like, well, I don't. This won't be a budget. This will be a lot of budgets. So when I have a venue, then I'll do a budget for that. When I have, you know, and so we will always be sort of thinking, you know, a year and a half down the road on as to what we're raising and what we're spending on the show and development and everything. But see, I'm a CPA, so budgets are like really super important to me. So, but I'm like, when we do our offering statement, then we will have a comprehensive budget all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm.
But in the development stage, I don't know if I'm going to be in La Jolla or Detroit or where, so that will make huge difference in what the budget exactly will look like for that.
It does, and what we're talking about here, right, is like it's sort of front. It's considered front money. So if you're like ready to do a production of something, whether it be Broadway, off Broadway, or you know a local theater where you have to enhance it and bring in money, you would be more likely to say like, oh, okay, we have to bring in this amount of money because we have a budget. But if you're trying to get this thing off the ground and you still have development costs and whatnot, you have to kind of take it a little slower because it's harder to raise this front money, right? It's always going to be harder because there's no plan in place. This may never go anywhere. They've just written you a check for $10,000. They may very well never see it again, you know. So they really have to believe in you. That's why it's so good that it's these personal relationships where you can say like, yeah, I'm making this happen. We're going to do it. You know, you're not going to lose your money, you know, without a fight. We're going to really work on this. But after you get that in place, then these people get usually the credit. You know, that's kind of the way front money works, right? You get the credit into the production, but you get it at a better rate. So your money, you know, when we're talking about once the show goes into profits, these people get a lot more consideration for coming in so early than somebody who comes in at the last minute. So you usually wouldn't have a specific budget at this stage of the game. That would be when you actually have a production in place.
What's the difference between investor and sponsors? So we have a musical. We try to find sponsors too.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the sponsor meaning not like individual people, but more like a big corporation.
Sure.
Our show, which we teach to people, is like our first Chinese American musical to portray that they're pursuing American dream.
Yes.
So this is the uniqueness. So we try to promote it to the corporations.
Yes. And how did you pitch that to the corporations? How do you do that?
We told them this is the first time it's a folk music written by Chinese immigrants.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's also we try to promote the uniqueness. So it's always like the first, just like what they call it, the immigrant got the job done, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we say this is the first Chinese immigrant writing the music and the book, the story with that Chinese immigrant pursuing American dreams.
Yes.
In modern time.
Yes.
So they like that. They all say, oh, they, after they saw it, they say, oh, this is like a Chinese Mao Mian.
Oh.
Yeah. This is our story. It's called Man to Man by Day, Man to Man Night. About the guy, the businessman, trying to sell mannequins during the day. and pursue singing opera at night. And then he get kicked out of the house by his wife because of too much singing.
Oh. I love it.
But then his voice wake up the mannequins at night one day.
That's so fun.
And then the wife wants to find out what's going on in the warehouse.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. Wow.
She turned into a mannequin also.
Oh my goodness.
And then later got sold.
It's been done.
I know. If I'd a nickel for every time I heard that story.
It worked well, and people would love it.
It's
say
great.
Chinese mafia, because they thought it's Chinese concert or Chinese acrobat. No, it's not. It's a first Chinese American musical.
It's so great. Well, I want to just highlight what you know he's saying. I'm sorry, what's your name again?
James.
Oh, I like your name. It's my name. I want to just highlight what you said that's so important, right? So you're saying that when we're talking about how you would pitch that story to a corporation, you're saying, like, what do I have in common? What does the story have in common with the people I'm pitching to, right? So you're finding something specific based on what this is representing to something that you believe would be a fit for that company, right? So you're saying, well, this is the first show that's Chinese American, you know, it's like one of these things and you should really support it for that reason. And then you're explaining what the story is, but I think what's most important about what you said in this context is that you're finding people who you believe would be a good fit for the piece, right? And then however you pitch it is great, you know. Like I mean,
yeah, right,
like
yeah.
we could sit here and pitch our projects, but that's I love the idea that we're talking globally about things that everybody can take away, you know, rather than making this a workshop about just pitch our project. It's like, what can you take away to use in your pitches? How can you tailor your pitches to your audiences? And I think that's a great way to do it. That's a really great.
Right now, we're trying to talk to Panda Express.
Yes. Yes.
Bank,
well, I have, you know, just it's interesting because I'm just to give you a little anecdote. I'm working on a show right now in Miami. It's called Amparo, and it's an immersive show. It's 5 tracks about the Cuban Revolution, and Miami has a gigantic Cuban population. And this show is sponsored by Bacardi. They actually commissioned the show, and they paid my company to do this. So we're executive producing this down there. And we can't keep the tickets in the door. Like, we thought it was going to be like a 2-month run just in this house that they converted into this rum factory. And we're now extended to the end of December. It sells out that fast because this audience is prime for what we're serving there, right? Like, I mean, and it's with Bacardi. So they are perfect because the story is really about the people who had Havana Club rum back before Castro came into power in Cuba and how they came in and took their factory. They took their factory and their recipes, similar to the way it happened with Bacardi, and they have this emotional connection to this piece. So if you can find somebody who's got an emotional connection to your piece, that's a great way to get either an investor as a corporate investor or a sponsor, right? They may be like, yeah, we'll give you money. You treat us as your corporate sponsor. You put us on all your advertising and your website and whatnot. And they're just like, this is part of their marketing budget. Bacardi's like losing money on this thing. But it's not because it's not selling out. It's just it wasn't budgeted and priced on purpose. They did it this way. It was budgeted and priced to bring as many people in the door so they didn't, and they don't lose their shirt on it, but they're not making really money on it. But it's such a great PR piece. So instead of them spending money on a billboard or a sign on a cab every month, they're having like people coming and drinking their rum every single night down in Miami and having a great time when they do it. Then they show the bottles and whatnot. So this is a very good thing to keep in mind when you're pitching to people if you're going to go to a sponsor. So what other kind of pitches can we do? Like, how would we get other people? You go first, and then you.
Okay. We're in a situation where we've been pitching mostly to private investors. Basically, our project, the first we're going full out with investment and production of a show, and we turn it into a company that will be producing different shows that are connected
mm-hmm.
to the same mission. And ever since, it's attracted amazing people that are more in the corporate world, that suddenly understand the model that we're trying to do instead of explaining to them the theater model.
Mm-hmm.
So we're raising through the company and then distributing like the investment through the different products.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had now some interest from Paradigm, for example, that just last week came up to us saying, you know, are you guys looking for investment? Are you looking for producers and everything? And we're like, yes, but like we're kind of going the independent way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
My way of reacting to it also is that I feel we should build a product first this way and then for us negotiate with them.
Mm-hmm.
What is a good approach not to lose your shirt also at those kind of big games when they start approaching you, and what is the proper way to pitch with them?
To pitch with like a company, you mean?
Yeah, like Paradigm. Like when, well, not necessarily pitch, but negotiate with them. Is it better if we are able to produce our show by ourselves and then like accept to maybe see if they could come in as, you know?
Well, I think it all has to do with what they want, right? Like, is this a beneficial contract, right? Like, what is it they're looking for? You know, it's like if you're this company, for example, right? If we're talking about like Panda Express, there, you know, hopefully the idea would be that they would give a certain amount of money toward the project, and then they would get some kind of billing. And of course, if the show makes money, I assume they'd be sort of an investor or something. But I don't know. Maybe they're just doing it for advertising purposes. So I think that it really comes down to is what they want in exchange, something you're willing to give them, right? If they're looking for like ownership in the project or whatever the thing might be, I think you just have to weigh what they're looking for and then see if it's worth it.
With your experience dealing with those kind of agencies, has it been successful to launch new, like a new show, or is it better so it's on?
Well, I guess I'm not quite certain based on what you're saying. If they're saying we're going to put money in the show, like are they saying it's Paradigm? They're going to put, they're
going
to invest
they're
in
really
the show.
Saying that you would, you know, probably be interested in investing and basically helping us produce it.
Okay, so yeah, and I think it depends on what does that mean,
right?
Are they just saying like we're going to write a check like any other investor? Are they saying like you have to do something extra for us, or maybe it relies on their people, their actors, and their wonderful artists and whatnot being a part of the production. So I think we'd have to have a more deep dive discussion. I'd be happy to do that with you, you know, to really discuss your particular situation. But I don't think I have enough information to answer that right now. But I think it's great. I mean, it's a good opportunity, and it's worth exploring.
Oh,
for
definitely.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we could. I'd be happy to talk about that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Do you want me to tell you like a pitch that I did that went well?
Yeah, tell us something that worked for you. Like you pitching it, and tell us who you pitched it to, and what did you do, and how did it work out?
Well, I'm not sure how to describe it. I mean, the one show I initially thought of was, I live in both worlds of TV and theater.
Yes.
Started out theater, wound up in TV. I, a long time ago, wrote a musical, a one-woman musical called Judy Speaks.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with Judy Garland,
mm-hmm.
and I ran across the tapes, the black market tapes of her trying to write her autobiography by
mm-hmm.
recording notes on her Mr. Young recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just did a reading of a straight transcription of those recordings, and throughout these recordings, she was lying on the wall, and she sings songs from different periods in her life. And I performed it.
Mm-hmm.
I just kept developing it
mm-hmm.
And improving it. And I did it down at the Here Performance Arts Center downtown and two other places. And it wound up, strangely, being picked to be in the HBO Aspen Comedy Arts Festival,
mm-hmm.
Which was hilarious to me because I had been desperately trying to get a show into that festival.
Mm-hmm.
And calculating like what do they want? What's hot right now? See, they like guys with comedy and stand up, and it was kind of saying for the first time, you know, screw what they want. Who cares if anybody even produces this? I'm obsessed with this woman. I need to say something about her right now, and I just kept developing it,
mm-hmm.
self-producing. I did all the licensing and all that research and stuff myself. And so I did it at Aspen Comedy Art Festival, and then I was approached by the Arts Nova Theater.
Yes.
Yeah, so they liked it, and I wound up being named at the festival, like Hollywood Reporter is like top 10 talents on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And Ars Nova wanted to produce it, and I had a meeting with them, and they did. We had a run, and we got lots of great press, and lots of great reviews, and then later I was offered to do this tour that a producer wanted to put together of it.
So wait, let me just cut you off. So how did you pitch this? Who did you pitch this
to?
I'm not hearing a pitch.
I've pitched TV shows,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have any experience like formally like pitching.
Yeah.
Because I've always primarily been known as a performer, so I'm always just sort of like writing my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did a one-woman show called Mama Drama, and it's a musical, but it's now being developed with a producer for TV. So we're getting ready to go in and pitch that.
Okay. And how are you going to do that? What's your pitch?
Well, this is a good, I think, example. You were talking about follow-through.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when Ars Nova told me like what they were spending, which wasn't like probably a lot of money to most producers, but because it was more than like $500, I went home and I cried my eyes out. It was terrifying to me that somebody was willing to say, we're going to put all of this money behind you because we believe in this show. And I felt this incredible amount of pressure, an incredible amount of, I don't deserve this, I'm going to disappoint, I'm an imposter. And I'm going somewhere with it. For the TV show that I'm developing, I, you know, sort of gathered my courage and asked an old sketch comedy producer I worked with named Jim Biederman, that I really liked. And I said, do you want to take a look at this script? I had done it at Joe's Pub and self-produced again. And he said, sure, I'll read it. The half-hour script that I did based on the Joe's Pub show. And he said he really liked it. And let's have a meeting. Let's meet for coffee. And I was at Two Rivers Theater at the time.
Oh, good. So I get it. So you found this guy who you had a relationship with before, and you figured, like, that would be a good guy to talk to. That makes total sense.
Yes.
Is there anybody else? Because I don't know if we have a hard stop here, but we probably have, like, 6 minutes left.
I was just going to say, yeah, you have about 5-6 minutes left.
Okay,
yeah.
Then it's a hard stop. Okay. So that said, is there anybody who's got, like, a great pitch that they had, like a success story or something that you wanted to bring up just to wrap this up? And I'll, you know, when we're done, I'll have a two-minute thing to say to you, but... Yes.
I divide my time between Ohio and New York. And I have a show called Somewhere I Can Scream, which is a true life murder case that happened in the 1920s in Ohio. And I had a successful run back there.
Yes.
And 2 days ago, I signed a contract with Claire's Theater to bring a show here in April.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats. Thank you. So regarding pitching.
Yes.
I was all excited about this meeting with the theater a couple weeks ago, and getting my hair done, and I just told my stylist about this, and he said, oh, I'd like to be involved. And he said, I'll give you $10,000.
Who cuts your hair? Everybody's ready to write that down? It's like, why are all these people calling? Yes.
Jack Holmes, if he knows them, and I've had some limited success here with short plays. And
yes.
He was just so excited for me, and he does have a successful real estate business on the side.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. So he was just sort of trying to get caught up in the excitement.
I love that. Well, you know, I think you bring up some really good points. I think you guys have hit on some very important topics today, right? I think you can go to pitching workshops and all that and really work on your specific pitch for your show. But this, I think, has been a very valuable time because I think people have brought up some general concepts that work for them, right? I think first and foremost, if you're working on a piece, and you said it before, this lady said it before about your Judy Garland piece, and you're like, I don't know if anybody cares about it, but I love it. And I think that if you love your piece, I have had people say to me, like, do you think this piece is okay? Do you think I should write this piece or that piece? I'm like, you should write what you want. You should write you should produce and write what you want, and don't let people stand in your way of doing that. Now, beware, you know, that like if you're writing something really out there, you might have less of a commercial potential, but I still don't think that that should hold you off from doing it. The first show I ever produced was called Thrill Me the Leopold and Loeb Story. It was about the thrill killers in the 1920s, and it was a musical. And that show, as weird as that show is, it's been running for 20 years now somewhere in the world, it all over the place. So people would look at that and say, you're writing a show about like gay serial killers? That is the weirdest thing I ever heard. But it works. So you write what you want, be passionate about it, talk to everybody you know about it, and you'll figure out, you know, you'll kind of learn how your pitch works. You'll start seeing when people start nodding off, and you'll see where their eyes perk up and they want to hear more. So I think it's all about talking to anybody you know. Talk to your hairstylist, talk to your friends, tell your friends to talk to your friends. Have that passion. And I think that, you know, you can have some documents. There's seminars. You probably already have documents on a pitch deck you can hand to people. But I think that this whole idea of doing a presentation for people, bringing in people you know, bringing in new people, have them bring their friends, do salons, those are great ways to pitch your material. Find people like the Panda Express, who says, like, I've got a vested interest in having shows about Chinese Americans seen for the first time, shows by Chinese Americans. Find that synergy. Find, like, you know, I always say to people, go through the IBDB. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Broadway database, right? Look through it and see where shows overlap, right? If your show feels like a similar flavor to something, look who the producers are. They're all listed there. You can find contact information pretty easily. Call those people. I've had people call me. They said, oh, I see you were a producer on Kinky Boots and Pippin. Well, I think you might like my show. Oh, well, what is your show? That's thinking outside the box. That's being creative. Facebook, really build a brand. I think that those are all things that will help you get your pitches across, but I think that the most important part about it is that passion that you have to have for your piece, and just keep working, keep plugging along, and you'll get it, right? Make friends with people and get to know people in the theater world. Yes.
Something that really worked for us was because it was about financial justice.
Yes.
And all the different issues that were going, people were having, we made a documentary. We went to people who couldn't put their kids through college, or college people who didn't eat, you know, ate one meal every 3 days, or, you know, whatever it was. It was really wonderful and impactful. It was something that we would show at our readings.
It's a fabulous idea, something visual.
Yeah,
something visual. Something recorded, something you could forward to somebody as a link to view.
So we had like a visit in the lobby, and people would come in and they would watch the documentary before they went in to see the play.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes afterwards as well. And that works really well. It really pulls in a lot of, you know, stuff that you're not going to include in the play. And the other thing
is a teaser video.
I mean, it was a proper documentary. It was shown in, you know, in Santa Barbara documentary place and other things. And the other thing was that we learned early on, we've never done anything in a church. I'm just saying this. But we did learn that there were several big theaters in L.A. that, you know, didn't really have anything to buy or liquor or anything like that. And so in several of these places, we established sort of an informal bar in the parking lot. Because often we would make $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 from our show from the parking lot. So,
great. I love it.
You know,
I love it. That's good thinking outside the box. Yes.
Yeah.
We have one more minute or no? How are we doing? Okay, good.
What is the most memorable and unusual pitch that you have ever been pitched for a show that just happened
to you? I have to be honest with you. It's a great question. And the thing is, people want to come up with like weird, crazy, creative pitches. There is no pitch that anybody could give me that would make me want to do a show if I didn't like the show. So I've had people give me a bottle of wine. I've had people give me a big stuffed bear. I've had them give me all stuff. And I appreciate it. But I didn't like their shows, so I would never be a part of it. So what you have to do is have clean, concise communication on how to describe the show. Don't go into like sordid details. Just have a good elevator pitch. It could be a few sentences. Then maybe have a longer description of the show if they're interested in what that couple sentences is, right? And then give them a script. And when you give somebody a script, please, like, make sure that either you proofread it really well and give it to somebody else to proofread, and have your grammar correct and have an acceptable format, because if it's not, people are going to think you don't know what you're doing. And if you see typos and you don't know the difference between there, there, and there, people are going to think you don't know how to write, and it's bad because that stuff jumps off the page and immediately people discount you. So make sure you've got a really good script, and the format should be an acceptable script for whatever medium you're doing it, right? Whether it's a play, a film, or whatever it is, make sure you've researched that, because professionals write in the correct format, and people who are just sitting at their typewriter don't. So just be sure you've got all that. And if you've got a musical, have a good demo. It doesn't have to be perfect, but have a good demo of your music. Because I always say, a musical, it's got to have great music, because there's so many musicals out there, and the music's not that good. Everybody gets to decide what's good or not, but if you can hear the music for a musical, it's so crucial. So that's what I would do. Keep it clean, concise, and have it impeccable. Have your presentation impeccable.
So, and the music don't be
You can do flash drive, you can put it online. Yeah, download a Dropbox link. Okay. It makes life easier.
Yeah, do it online. And then
absolutely.
If you give them written material,
you
write
it. Yeah,
they can either send a PDF. Some people like a PDF.
Now, and they can get the logo of something on a flash drive. They can do a good promotional thing when they get out.
Absolutely.
It's good to have sample music on your website, because if they're talking to their friends, they might not have the flash drive with them, or your CD or whatever.
It's
but
true.
They can always read, if you have a good website name, really memorable, they can say, let's go to this, or call it up on their phone right then and there, and they automatically have it really at hand.
You're right, absolutely.
So,
yeah, have it so it's easy to give that information. It's like you can forward it in an email really easily, or download it. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Thank you guys. Thank you. Thank you for your time.